Accession number 30631, Mr. Herbert Ladbroke, Reel 9. Now, what about the black market? Were you aware of it? Did you take part in it? The black market, were you aware of it or take part of it?
I don't think we took much notice of it.
Did you know it existed?
Oh, yes, it was well known, but it didn't seem to affect us much at all.
And where were you living? I mean, were you in the Lüneburg area, or had you moved back to Hamburg, or where were you?
Oh, no, we moved towards the coast, and wherever there was, say, no electricity, and so the local population couldn't get any radio information. We helped them by broadcasting.
So you continued to do your broadcasting work?
Yes, we did it completely voluntary. He was very good at this, Sergeant McGibbon. He went to the mayor of a village or town and offered his services to broadcast just the German news as they affected that part of Germany and the peace negotiations and so on. We did more, really. It was more or less voluntary work. The war office was aware of it and gave their no, I wouldn't say they didn't allow us to do it, but they turned a blind eye to what we were doing. Once or twice we were asked to go to some place, say a funeral of an important person, general, and do some broadcasting there to the troops.
So you broadcast to the troops as well?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And what would you broadcast then? That's just sort of, things he wanted to say.
Oh, yes. So we were usually given a written screed and just read it out as it was written down on paper.
Now, how were you getting on with the German civilians? I mean, you've got a sort of unique perspective on it. After the war had finished, how did you find them? Well, what did you think of their attitude? And what did they think of you?
All of them claimed that Hitler and his Nazis were a minority. And I really, that got my goat, that really got me annoyed, because Hitler was voted in 1933 by a majority of 98% of the German voters. So to my mind, the whole of the German nation, with a just small minority, were responsible for all the atrocities, because they must have known what he was up to, because the book Mein Kampf had been published already widely.
So you were pretty unsympathetic to them?
Absolutely.
And what did they think of you? Could they tell you a German?
No, with the exception of that one chap, who had the suspicion that there was more to it than just happened to know a German. I've never once was suspected of being either a Jew or a German by birth or anything like this. When they knew or heard the name Landsberg, it puzzled them, but they didn't have the courage to say, where did you get the name from?
Now, anything else you remember before you demoted? Because it's quite a few months you're out in Germany. Any other incidents or things you remember before you demobilized?
No, I would have to look at my diary. I've got quite a diary. If I find anything that is relevant, I'll drop it down on a bit of paper and send it to you.
Now, what about your demobilisation? Tell me about that.
The what?
Your demobilisation. How did that happen?
That was very nice. We had to report as I was a staff sergeant, I had to report, and I was put in charge of a large number of chaps putting on trains from certain collection points. And when we arrived in Britain, and I had to empty my my kit bag, and in there were two little radios. About he said, "How on earth did you get these radios?" I said, "Well, we were stationed at Tilburg, and in Holland, and we had we found a barge full of these radios, but no valves, and before they actually were scuttling the barge, you know, so it wouldn't fall into British hands, everybody helped themselves to these switches radios, of course, and threw them away soon when they realized they had no valves. But we found another barge later on with valves to fit them, and so my regiment, the whole regiment, the whole Pioneer Corps, had one or two of these Philips radios brought home.
And now, what happened with the demo? What were the arrangements?
And they were very nice. The customs officers, I said, "Well, you've been how long have you been in the army?" And I said, 6 years. "Well, I think you deserve to keep it, but if you like to make us a donation of one of them, that'd be very nice." So I gave them one, and I kept one for about 10 years here.
And what about your demob?
And then we were given, you could keep your army raincoat, your army greatcoat, if you wanted to. And I remember that winter, the first winter when I went back to work, that came in very handy. I must have looked very, very strange on a 19 bus going to work in an army raincoat.
Did you get a demob suit?
Yes, I got a very nice demob suit, and
this is December 45.
That's right.
Now, what were you going to do afterwards? I mean, firstly, what was your situation? I mean, were you naturalised British by this time?
No,
or not?
No, I wasn't.
So tell me about that. When was that sorted out?
Cause, well, I was told right away to report to the police, and when they looked at my record, you know, I had my pay book with me, and army pay book and all this, they said, "Well, as you be naturalised, have you applied yet?" You say, "Yes, application is in the Home Office, but there's a long waiting list." And I said, "Well, you don't have to come again." You know, I lived then in Fulham for a while, and they knew me quite well in Fulham police station. And most people who were not naturalised and had to report regularly to the police.
So when were you actually naturalised?
In 1947.
But so that took quite a while. Now, what about your work? What were you going to do? Were you going to go back to your old job?
Oh yes, my old firm took me back. They were very nice. And
so that was returning to work as.
I returned to work in January of 46.
And what were you working as? Can you just remind me? Sorry.
The company was a metal company, metallurgical, mining and refining.
And you were in the offices?
And I was at first in the sales department. I didn't do much there. And then in the statistical department, and I finished up in there. TIS section, which is technical information section, because of my languages. And I stayed with them 33 years.
So that's a long time.
33 years. And then they moved the library to Birmingham, and my wife didn't want to go to Birmingham. So I was very lucky, just when I was at my lowest, thinking that I have to leave the company, I would get a nice silver or golden handshake, but that would not work. I got a phone call from across the river, the Inner London Education Authority, ILEA, and had been teaching in the evening classes for years before the war, and after the war again I went back to teaching evening classes. And they said, well, we've got a job here in the at County Hall, just opposite where you worked. I worked in Millbank House, opposite a few hundred yards away, the other side of the river. And can you start on Monday? We can't put you on a full pay, but because you've got to have a medical first. But if you're prepared on a voluntary list, but you get some money, but it's not a permanent contract. And so I started to be asked. I couldn't get out of the chairman's room when he told me, I'm afraid it's the last day for you, and it was very sad after all those years to let you go. And I wanted to get out of the house before County Hall closed at 5 o'clock. And he thought I was upset, so he let me go. And I ran across Lambeth Bridge, and I was just there 10 to 5 Friday night. And I said, all right, I'll be here 9 o'clock Monday morning. And I stayed with him 6 years until I was 65.
So that finished you.
I left this company.
So it's evening work and lecturing. Now, have you ever visited Germany since the war, or do you want to?
No. We went. I didn't even want to go to France because on holiday, but we went in 1947, just after I got nationalised. We went for.
Why didn't you want to visit France either? Same sort of feeling.
Well, the French I disliked for two reasons. First of all, they handed my Jewish relatives over to the Germans. They first sent them to a French concentration camp.
And then
handed them over. And then another thing, when we were at St. Malo on the football field, and we had all our kit bags stacked, ready to get on the boat home, you know, in after Dunkirk.
40.
The French came with little wheelbarrows and wheeled our kit bags away, and we could do nothing to stop them because we didn't want to upset them in any way, so they wouldn't get onto the ships. And I never forgave them that.
And how about the Germans? You didn't want to go back to Germany for obvious reasons.
No, Germany, yes. My sister went back to Germany, paid for by the local Leipzig Borough Council. But I said, I never want to see those bastards again, especially with the 98% voting for Hitler. They're all guilty.
Has your view towards Germany mellowed now that most of the people responsible have died?
Oh, yes.
Or do you still feel bitter about the Germans?
Mind you, when we took exchange boys to stay with us when our kids were of school age, we invited a French boy, Alain, so an agency that arranged exchange between nations of school children. We had Alain here, Alain Tretou, and a German boy, Jochen Thies, who wanted to be a pastor, as he once told us when he was here. And they came 2 years running. That's the only concession I made of contact with them. And we still have Jochen ringing us, although he became a pastor. He's now, he had a bad stroke and he's long retired. But he's the age of my kids, 60.
Thank you very much.